everyone. Welcome to the next episode of Words About Biology. I know we took a bit of a break for some family visits and some holidays, but we're back now and hopefully you're ready for some more science. For today's episode, I'm going to talk about the gut microbiota. So all those little bacteria that live inside your intestine, in your digestive system, that are helping you digest your foods and maybe doing other things. So what I wanted to touch on today were the other influences of the gut microbiota. So aside from helping you digest food, what other influence are they having on your behavior? So the gut microbiota are the collection of microbes that live in our intestine. There are tens of trillions of microorganisms that are from 1,000 different species of bacteria, and the total that you have in your body can weigh up to 2 kilograms. When we're comparing different individuals, we generally see that about a third of the microbiota population is common, so everyone has the same 1/3, but then the other 2/3 are specific to the individual. So the majority of your gut microbiota is different than your best friend's gut microbiota. While they are differing in the population, the functions generally remain the same, and that is to help your body digest food. They are involved in vitamin production, specifically B and K. And they also contribute to your immune function. And this is partially due to a barrier effect. So they create kind of a wall between the intestinal lumen, where pathogens can be, and your bloodstream, which is on the other side of your intestinal epithelial. Now, because the gut microbiota plays such a large role, it's often referred to as an organ. And further than that, it's referred to as an acquired organ. And this is because when you're born as a baby, you are sterile. So you do not have any of these microbes in your intestine. Intestinal colonization starts right after birth, and we pick up these bacteria from either the vaginal canal, touching your mother's skin, the air, the environment. Pretty much anything that would touch a baby's mouth could introduce bacteria and therefore start the colonization of the intestine. Now, as we age, it evolves and generally becomes fairly stable after 3 years of age. It's also possible that the gut microbiota can change or adapt due to changes in your diet. Maybe the nutrient composition of what you're eating changes, so therefore your gut microbes will adapt in order to be optimal for digesting those foods. However, there is a bad type of change, and we call this dysbiosis, and this is when your gut microbiota are out of balance. And when this happens, you can often see bowel disorders such as inflammatory bowel disease. This can also lead to allergies, diabetes, and even obesity. There are a couple ways that we can affect our gut microbiota, and these are through taking probiotics and prebiotics. Now, probiotics are live organism supplements, so there are specific strains that we've determined to be beneficial, and you can often take these just as pills. And prebiotics are not live organisms, but they are metabolites that have been shown to encourage the activity of certain microorganisms. So essentially you're taking something that will feed the beneficial microorganisms and make them flourish. Probiotics and prebiotics are also a couple ways that we can affect the gut microbiota population if there's an issue. So now I'm going to move on to kind of the cool stuff, i.e. why I wanted to talk about this topic in the first place, and that's the weird and wonderful things or weird and wonderful impacts that the gut microbiota can have on organisms that is not necessarily super related to digesting food. So it's thought that gut microbes influence behavior through the production of small metabolites which interact directly with our nervous system or which enter our bloodstream and then reach our brain directly and influence our behavior that way. There is a well-studied link between the gut and the brain, with the gut microbiome playing a prominent role in this link. There have been several studies performed on rodents that were kept in a germ-free environment that suggest that the gut microbiota influences the development of emotional behavior, as well as stress and pain modulation systems. And I'll throw up a link to that paper on the blog, though I'm not going to discuss it in any detail here. Additionally, the composition of the gut microbiota has been implicated in anxiety and depression. However, the question remains, do the changes in the gut microbiota lead to depression, or does depression cause the changes in the gut microbiota? There is one review that was released recently that addresses this question, and what they found was that both possibilities were feasible given the current research available. Either way, it suggests that depression and anxiety could be ameliorated through the manipulation of the gut microbiome, so through the use of pro or prebiotics. I'll also provide you guys a link to this article on the blog. So the article that I found that kind of inspired this episode was actually about the gut microbiota of fruit flies. And the article itself is called, "A Gut Microbial Factor Modulates Locomotor Behavior in Drosophila." And this was by Schroeder and colleagues. This article was published at the end of October in Nature. What Schroeder and colleagues found was that changes in the gut microbiota of fruit flies can affect their locomotion patterns. Specifically, that flies raised in germ-free environments or flies given an antibiotic treatment have a hyperactive locomotor behavior, meaning they have increased walking speed and increased daily activity when compared with flies that were raised in a normal environment with the natural gut microbiomes. They then set forth to figure out why this was happening. So they supplied the hyperactive flies with various bacterial strains, and they found that the hyperactivity was normalized by colonization with Lactobacillus brevis. So there was one specific bacteria in the gut microbiome when, if it was absent, the flies had increased walking behaviors, which I think is pretty interesting that one bacteria could have that sort of impact on physical activity. After discovering this singular bacteria that corrected the behavior, they wanted to look deeper to find what it was about it that was affecting the locomotion of these flies. So what they found was that the Lactobacillus brevis was producing an enzyme called xylose isomerase, and it was this enzyme that recapitulated the locomotor effects of microbial colonization. And this was done through modulating the sugar metabolism in the flies. Specifically, xylose isomerase is an enzyme that catalyzes the interconversion of D-xylose and D-xylulose. I'm not going to say these names anymore. I'm simply going to refer to it as a sugar-converting enzyme. Schroeder and colleagues confirmed that the lack of this enzyme was responsible for the behavior by performing one experiment where they supplemented just the enzyme to the gut microbiota-free flies, and they found that their activity was normal. The next question they wanted to answer was, why was this happening, or how does this enzyme specifically work or not work to affect the activity levels of these flies? They did this by analyzing the composition of metabolites within the flies themselves. One of the differences they found was that the bacteria-free flies had more trehalose. This is also a sugar. And this could potentially be explained because xylose isomerase decreases the availability of glucose, which is required for the synthesis of trehalose. In order to prove this theory, they supplemented normal flies with trehalose, and when they did this, they observed that these normal flies had increased walking speeds. So trehalose was the key here. So to sum up so far, lack of gut microbiota equals lack of xylose isomerase enzyme equals increased trehalose concentrations equals increased walking speeds. The authors then took this one step further and proceeded to investigate the neural basis of the hyperactivity phenomenon. So to do this, they used genetic approaches and activated neurons in the fruit flies that regulate locomotion. The results that they found focused on a type of neuron called an octopaminergic neuron, which produces the neurotransmitter molecule octopamine. Now, octopamine is a well-characterized regulator of locomotion in flies. What Schroeder and colleagues found was that the walking activity of flies that lacked the gut bacteria but had been given xylose isomerase was increased by the activation of genes encoding enzymes needed for the synthesis of octopamine. Further, the authors observed that flies with their natural microbiota and those that had been treated to remove their gut bacteria but had received the xylose isomerase both walked faster if they received octopamine. So while these links were found, there are a couple of key questions that still remain to be answered. One of which being, how does the xylose isomerase affect the level of trehalose in the fruit fly? And then how does this level of trehalose affect the activity of octopamine producing neurons in the brain? Nevertheless, this paper presents an interesting first step, an interesting look into how gut microbiota can affect locomotive behavior, which is something that isn't often talked about or looked at in the literature as of yet. Another interesting question would be how or if this is relevant to species other than fruit flies. There have been many discoveries made using fruit flies as a model, and they don't always have a perfect correspondence with mammalian species. However, this study does kind of let us know that there might be something interesting to pay attention to in the enzymes of gut bacteria in humans, and there's potential for their effects on sugar metabolism and on the neuronal circuits that regulate walking activity. So that's where I'm going to leave this episode on gut microbiota. Before I cut this off, I did want to mention a news article that just came out today. So I'm recording this on November 26th, the Monday. This morning, an article came out claiming that scientists in China have claimed to create the first gene-edited human babies, and this was using CRISPR technology. I just gave it a brief read-through. It is not peer-reviewed and published yet. I believe they released a series of YouTube videos, which I guess is cool for the times now. But there are twin girls that they're claiming to be the very first genetically modified human beings. And they did this through a procedure very close to IVF. But within the IVF procedure, they introduced a CRISPR-Cas9 complex to help with the prevention of AIDS in these twins. So what I read looks like the father is HIV positive, which doesn't necessarily mean that his children would be HIV positive, but just at risk. So they've introduced the CRISPR with the genetically altered CCR5 gene. And this is the gene that HIV utilizes when infecting humans. So the idea was to make the girls immune to HIV throughout their life. Now, I'm not going to make any claims on the validity of this work. I think before it gets really out there and published, I can't say any more on that. But something interesting and cool that just came out today that you might want to look into or might be interested in reading about. With that, I'm going to sign off. As always, you can find the blog posts related to the podcast at wordsaboutbiology.wordpress.com. Words About Biology is on both Instagram and Twitter. On Instagram, it's Words About Biology, and on Twitter, it's Words About Bio. Feel free to reach out to me on either platform. With that, I hope you tune in to the next episode, and until then, stay interested in biology. See you later, guys.